Chapter 33. Could he force me?
And we've hit hyperspace,
the clone pilot said, looking over the instrument panel.
5 hours to Yavin 4, sir.
Thank you, pilot. Luminara tucked her hands behind her back and took a deep breath in through her nose, reaching for the Force. Already she was feeling guilty about not outlining the plan to Master Windu. This mission was a big risk, and he was the Grand Master of the Order. He'd spent the past decade and a half holding them together with what felt sometimes like nothing but willpower, and here she was, undermining his authority. But she had seen the guilt and stress in his eyes. She knew how he felt like he had to be the practical one, and how that would have meant forbidding them from taking the ships on the grounds that losing them could be devastating to the survival prospects of the fleet. So instead, she had told them the lie that she and Obi-Wan had come up with, and removed the decision from his hands entirely. Yes, she was feeling a little guilty. But all of that was bearable with how the Force was singing around her with rightness. Staring out of the viewport of the freighter she was in, Luminara let her eyes unfocus and basked in that feeling. She hadn't realized how much she had missed it these past 15, or was it 18? She couldn't remember feeling like this during the war either. Years.
Lumi?
Her eyes snapped back into focus, and she turned her head to look at the speaker that had just entered the cockpit. Quinlan. The tall, dreadlocked man smiled at her, crossing his arms over his chest. He leaned casually against the doorway, ignoring the two clone pilots.
"So how are you enjoying being a rebel for once?"
he asked, still smiling.
"Haven't broken out in hives, have you?"
Luminara rolled her eyes. "It is a bit strange, yes," she said, turning back to the view of hyperspace. "I'm more used to being the authority than rebelling against it. But..." She hesitated, then smiled to herself as the Force purred around her. "I will admit to enjoying it a little."
Quinlan snickered. "And you were always yelling at me for the stuff I pulled."
Pushing off of the wall, he came to stand beside her.
"Meanwhile, your first bit of rebellion has you stealing half a fleet."
"Only a quarter," Luminara protested wryly.
Quinlan snickered again. "And Obi-Wan. Though I'll admit that it's less of a surprise with him after how he came back."
He looked around the cabin like he expected the human man to pop out of one of the overhead cabinets.
"Where is he, by the way?"
"Staying back to run interference with the rest of the council." She turned to leave the cockpit.
This wasn't a conversation to have in public.
Palming at the door, she didn't bother to turn and see if Quinlan was following her.
"Interference?"
Quinlan's feet made no sound as he padded after her.
The hall was filled with murmurs coming from the various rooms opening out onto it.
The various knights and clones that filled the rooms were busy preparing for the coming fight ahead, whether by meditating or checking and rechecking their weapons. They paused in their preparations and nodded respectfully at her as she passed by. Luminara nodded back, even as she answered Quinlan's question. Yes. We don't know how long it will take to plan the rescue with the Resistance, so we needed someone to stay behind and delay the rest of the fleet. It would do no good to have them show up and try to drag us back in front of the Resistance.
So Obi-Wan the Silver Tongue stayed behind then?
I am a known quantity to the traditionalists, Luminara said. We decided that of the two of us, I would raise the least suspicion that anything was amiss.
Well, that's good, a new voice interrupted. But I wanted to ask, Master Unduli, what are we going to say when we do get to the Resistance?
Luminara turned and inclined her head, inviting the new participant to the conversation to join them in their walk. Knight Katuni.
Quinlan patted her on the back. That's my cue to leave, then, I think, he said.
Katuni smiled at her as Quinlan walked away, a far softer expression than what Luminara had usually seen her directing towards council members.
My apologies for interrupting, Master, she said, her voice humble. It's just that, in the excitement of leaving, I don't believe that everyone here is aware of what our excuse is.
Luminara raised an eyebrow at her. Excuse? She said. There's no need to make excuses with the Resistance, I think. We will simply tell the truth, that we are there to assist in any way possible with the rescue of the children.
Katuni nodded thoughtfully. Keeping it simple, then. I like it.
Quite. Luminara could sense that she wanted to ask something else. Keeping her silence, she waited for the woman beside her to collect her thoughts.
After nearly a minute of silence, Katuni spoke again. Master Unduli, have you ever worked with the Resistance before? I mean, in a battle.
Luminara looked at her carefully out of the corner of her eye.
Only in battles between ships, I'm afraid, she said. Why do you ask?
Katuni looked down at her hands, which had started to pick at her nail beds as she spoke.
It's silly, she said slowly. It's only... Now that we're away from the fleet, I'm finding that some of the stories that I've heard from the older knights, the ones that fought in the war...
Ah... Luminara understood her quietness now.
You are afraid, then, that we will be forced to do all of the fighting while they stay back.
Katuni shrugged and didn't look at her.
I know it's silly, she said. I'm the one who pushed to go, and the Resistance is not the Republic. They're not the ones that left us to die.
Her voice cracked, and she fell silent again. Luminara debated internally whether or not to place a hand on Katuni's shoulder. She wasn't sure if the proud young woman would accept her comfort. But then she saw her chin wobble. Gently, she laid her hand between Katuni's shoulder blades. The woman tensed under the touch for a moment, before relaxing.
Like you said, the Resistance is not the Republic, she said. For one, they're actually rescuing children.
Katuni chuckled, sounding strained.
Luminara continued.
For another, we don't answer to them the way we answered to the Senate. If we do not agree with their plans, we have far more ability to protest.
She reached up and squeezed Katuni's shoulder reassuringly.
I understand your fears, she said, lowering her voice. That you are only going to get your friends killed for nothing. But let me reassure you. So long as I draw breath, I will do everything in my power to keep us safe as possible.
She looked the young knight over and smiled encouragingly.
Just focus on saving the children. I will do the rest.
Ezra opened his eyes to the concerned looks of Dr. Nima and Zeb.
He grimaced.
Sorry, he whispered, his throat feeling like the plains during the dry season.
It's quite all right, Nima said soothingly, brushing back his rapidly growing bangs from his forehead.
I'm actually surprised that this did not happen during an earlier session. I've set an IV to flush the Orenda tea from your system.
Looking up, Ezra saw an IV bag hanging from a pole attached to the medbay bed. They were in the Will of the Wills now, rather than the Hidden Temple. The ship had been left behind since it was smaller, and apparently Masters Unduli and Windu hadn't wanted to leave Dr. Nima completely undefended. The bag was filled with a clear fluid, steadily dripping something into a line that led into his hand. And behind the line, slightly out of focus, were the rest of the crew that joined him for his sessions. Sabine was in her usual position, sitting on the bed closest to Zeb's chair, with her knees to her chest. Unusually, her forehead was pressed against the tops of her knees, and she wasn't looking at him. All the other times she'd been here, she'd preferred to keep her eyes on him. Gold Squad was looking a little weird, too, staring at him with what looked like actual concern. Ezra frowned.
Don't worry. It's only some saline with a few nutrients, Nima said, misinterpreting his puckered brow.
Reaching up, she gave the dripping part of the bag a little twist, making it drip faster.
You were looking a little peaky when you came in today.
She trailed off and hesitated.
She means you look like you got run over by a speeder,
Don piped up from where he was standing close to the door. Nima closed her big eyes and sighed. There was a sharp smack, and then Don yelped.
I would not have put it that way, she said delicately, as a sharply whispered conversation started up behind her between Don and Dicer. But I cannot disagree with it. You do seem to have taken a noticeable step back in your recovery from your ordeal. If I may...
She trailed off and hesitated before forging onward.
May I ask the cause of this?
Ezra swallowed.
It didn't really help with how dry his throat felt.
Flicking his eyes over to Zeb, he only saw concern and encouragement in his eyes. Sabine still wasn't looking up from her knees. He plucked at a loose thread of the sheet he was lying under, with a hand that didn't have an IV attached to it, considering. It had been gnawing at him ever since Master Unduli had told him. And she had said that Nima had been the first to bring it to their attention.
It's quite all right if you don't wish to speak of it. I'm not your primary physician.
Master Unduli told us. Ezra forced the words out before he could lose his nerve. About the bond. She said you were the first person to notice it properly. Nima froze mid-gesture before abruptly sitting back in her chair.
I see.
Gently, she laid a hand over his still fretting hand and stilled it.
I rather gather that Jonas has not been taking it well, then.
Ezra sucked on his lower lip and looked away before shaking his head. Wait, Bond? Dicer asked, looking up from where she had been shaking a finger in Don's face. What do you mean, Bond? Ezra shifted in the bed, aware of how everyone's gaze had shifted over to look at him. Out of the corner of his eye, he could see that even Sabine had managed to lift her face from her knees enough to peer at him. Nima thankfully took over before the silence stretched out too long.
I had had a theory about Bridger and his relationship with Joris for a while now. Recently, it was confirmed.
Okay, but you didn't answer my question,
Dicer said after a short silence.
What do you mean, Bond?
She was backed up by a low rumble that emanated from Sergeant Arwen's chest. Nima hesitated, her hand squeezing Ezra's. While she was hesitating, Zeb shifted in his seat so that he was sitting forward, resting his forearms on the bed and making it dip.
"You okay with having this aired out here?"
he asked. Ezra pressed his lips together for a moment, before giving in and biting the lower one. The stitch had been taken out the day before, anyway. He shrugged. Nima's eyes flickered over to him at his shrug. She seemed to take it as permission then, her jaw clenching as she turned back to Gold Squad.
"Jarrus and Bridger have amassed a Padawan bond," she said simply. "One that neither of them consented to."
"What?" Don pushed Dicer's finger down and cocked his head to one side. "Their master and apprentice now? How'd he end up in something like that without consent? Were they, like, drunk when they signed the papers?"
Without looking away, Dicer smacked Don again. "Quiet. Dr. Nima, the way you're talking, I'm getting the impression that this is more than just some legal distinction."
Nima bowed her head. "You are correct." Pulling her hand away from Ezra's, she pressed her palms together tightly.
"It is a bond between minds, neither lightly made nor broken."
"Like psychic?"
Don seemed completely incapable of taking a hint. He peered at Ezra like he was some sort of specimen. It made Ezra squirm, memories of how the so-called doctors at the academy had looked at him the same way.
And of course, with the memories of the academy came the thoughts that had been circling his head for the past 2 days.
The sound of Nima explaining what a Master Padawan bond was to Gold Squad faded into a distant static as Ezra remembered his last Empire Day. The day he had first met the Grand Inquisitor and felt his cold, alien mind snaking through his skull. And then the days that came after, that led to Sumar's farm and the buzz of the lights above him as pain lashed through his face. And the end of those days. Kanan. Ezra could feel Zeb's concerned gaze against the side of his face, but he didn't meet it. Twisting his fingers in the sheet covering him, he bit his lower lip again and looked at Nima. She was gesturing now, her fingers waggling through the air towards Don, who was leaning back and looking intimidated. Her mouth was serious as she spoke, but he could see the hints of a smile around her eyes. Would he have smiled at the Grand Inquisitor if the ship hadn't been attacked? If it had been the Powan's face that he had opened his eyes to? The idea gnawed at him. That he couldn't trust his own mind, his own emotions. It didn't help that Kanan had been avoiding him. Ezra couldn't ask him when he wouldn't even stay in the same room as him.
"And that is why we were so concerned," Nima concluded, folding her hands in her lap. "Was there any questions?
Could he have made me love him?" Everyone turned to Ezra. Abruptly, he realized that he had spoken out loud.
"I'm sorry," Nima said, reaching out to place a hand on his leg. "I don't quite understand what you're asking."
He could feel his ears burning in embarrassment. It felt so silly saying it out loud like that. But now that it was out, I was meant to go to the Grand Inquisitor, he said, dropping his eyes back down to his lap. He twisted the sheet between his fingers.
And
he hunched his shoulders up around his ears.
"He scared me. He really scares me."
He took a deep breath.
"But Kanan, I feel safe and happy around him. And I was on the streets for years before. I know better than to just trust someone I just met. But as soon as I really woke up after that cell and saw him on that station, it was like
nothing else mattered. I just knew that I would be okay if I was with him, and I've never felt like that towards someone before, and I shouldn't have felt like that towards him, but I did. And so when Master Unduly told me about the bond, I started wondering about that feeling, and now I can't get the thought out of my head that it's the bond that's making me feel like this, not me, and that if I'd actually made it to the Grand Inquisitor...
His voice cracked, and Ezra suddenly couldn't go on. Drawing his legs up to his chest, he pressed his burning face into them. He didn't want anyone to see the tears welling up. Saying it out loud, giving a voice to his fears, it all just made the memories come back up. The cold snakes that had slithered through his head every time he was near the Grand Inquisitor. Would they have become the warm blankets of Kanan? Zeb's hand began to rub his back. Ezra didn't look up. Nima wouldn't let him stay like that, though. Her gentle hands touched his temple and jaw, making him raise his head. Her eyes were very soft as she looked at him. "This has been bothering you for a while, hasn't it?" Ezra pressed his lips together tightly and nodded, embarrassed. "Oh, Bridger." She smoothed the hand over the top of his head, soothingly. For a moment, Ezra almost thought that she was going to press a motherly kiss to his forehead. "I wish that you had come to me earlier. I could have spared you so much worry."
"Well, he kind of had a lot on his mind," Zeb growled, not stopping the hand rubbing Ezra's back. "What with Kanan fleeing the room whenever he popped up."
"I wasn't blaming the child, Aurelius," Nima said coolly, her eyes hardening a little as she looked towards the older man. They softened once again as she turned back to Ezra. "Bridger," she said, before stopping herself. "No, Ezra. Your worries are understandable. Master Padawan bonds do encourage the growth of affection between participants." Ezra looked back down, his eyes burning. So he had been right. It wasn't...
Nima's fingertips caught his chin. "Encourages," she repeated, "but does not create." Ezra sniffled. "A Master Padawan bond is very powerful, but it cannot create something out of nothing." She moved her hand from Ezra's chin to his shoulder and gave it a reassuring squeeze. "It can only build on what's already there. If the Grand Inquisitor had managed to keep you as his apprentice, he still wouldn't have been able to force you to like him with the bond. From what I understand, all you feel for him is fear. Because that would have been all he could have built off of." Ezra wiped at his eyes.
"But Master Unduly said..."
"Master Unduly did not explain herself properly." Nima's voice had suddenly become quite chilly. "The bond itself cannot force you to love someone. It would take more..." She hesitated for a moment, looking away. "More mundane means to force love." "The bond could have helped with that."
"You just said it couldn't force love, though," Dicer interrupted. "It sounds like you're saying just that now."
"Well," Nima said, her voice going icy, "if you would let me finish my explanation." She trailed off meaningfully, pinning Gold Squad with her gaze. She only lit up once they squirmed and looked away. "As I was saying," she said, turning back to Ezra, "what Master Unduly didn't explain was that a forced bond, combined with the damage that was done to you, would have been like..." She paused, looking thoughtful. "It would have been like locking you in a room with the Grand Inquisitor, making you so isolated and dependent on him that you would end up grasping at any bit of kindness he showed you. Like a hostage situation, with you as the hostage." Ezra latched onto that thought, grateful for an excuse to think about something else.
So, like that case when a bunch of people were taken hostage at a Corwald bank, and then once they were free, a couple of them married the robbers because they let them go to the fresher and stuff?
Yes, Nima smiled. Forcing himself into your mind, he could make you question your interpretation of reality, make you reliant on him for how you perceived the world around you. That would have been how he made you love him, not the bond itself. She squeezed his shoulder again. What you feel for Jarrus is you and you alone. Ezra couldn't keep a smile from spreading across his face. Still,
I trusted him pretty quick,
he pointed out.
Well, he was also the first person to be nice to you in nearly a year, kid.
Zeb butted in.
Not exactly a stretch that you might get fond of him for that.
Ezra huffed and looked back down. Yeah, that did make sense. Still,
why is he avoiding me then? He asked. I mean, he practically runs from the room when he sees me in it. I thought that maybe he just felt violated by the bond, but if it only builds on what's there...
He stopped, struggling to find the right words.
I mean, he said finally, I know he likes me. I know he cares about me as well, but now whenever I get near him...
He stopped and swallowed as his voice cracked.
All I feel from him is disgust.
There was silence at his pronouncement. Ezra pressed his lips together nervously.
He was saying a lot of things out loud today that he had only thought before.
Then,
shit, kid, that sucks,
Don said, sounding sympathetic.
Ezra had nearly forgotten about Gold Squad in the relief that his feelings were real. He jumped a little at the sound of Don's voice.
It really does, Dicer added sympathetically. I don't know what it's like to actually feel other people's emotions, but it can't be nice feeling that from someone you love.
Sergeant Arwen growled. Ezra felt a little crazy when he realized that it sounded like Arwen was agreeing with Dicer.
When did they start being nice to him?
No, he was already dealing with a lot. He was not going to get involved with this mystery right now.
Still, he said, shrugging off Nima's hand from his shoulder.
I wish I knew why he feels so grossed out.
Maybe it's not about you, Zeb suggested. Maybe he doesn't know this about the bond. Maybe he thinks he is forcing you to like him.
That's quite possible, Nima agreed. He was only a Padawan when he left the Order, after all.
What? Dicer looked confused as she butted in. Wait, you said this was a Master Padawan bond, with Bridger as the Padawan. How can Jarrus be a Padawan as well?
Calling it a Master Padawan bond refers to its structure, not the relative ranks of those involved, Nima said. In any case...
There was a loud crackle and hiss. Ezra looked up with everyone else as the speaker system came online.
Attention! Attention! Several ships have entered Yavin 4's orbit. The Jedi have arrived.
Luminara breathed, centering herself. Back straight, chin up. Nothing was wrong. They were supposed to be here. The Force said so, and the Resistance didn't know any better. Obi-Wan would be running interference. They were supposed to be gone for a week, and if their luck held, they would have done the assault and be back with the fleet before anyone figured out where they were.
Nervous, Master Unduli?
Numenara looked to her right and managed to summon a strained smile. Katuni smiled back at her, looking far more relaxed now that they were actually here.
Don't worry, she said. I've got a good feeling about this.
Oddly enough,
That helped uncoil the tension that had taken up residence in Luminara's chest. The younglings had always seemed to have a stronger connection to the Force after the fall of the temple. When the Force had felt shadowed and muddy, they had always seemed confident in their actions. For Luminara, who so often felt lost these days, their confidence was admirable.
"Thank you, Knight Katuni," she said. "Let us hope that your good feeling proves to be true."
"Sirs, we're cleared for landing,"
the clone pilot's voice crackled over the intercom.
"We'll be touching down in 3 minutes."
Reaching up, Luminara pressed the button to reply.
"Acknowledged, pilot," she said. "Thank you."
Across from her, Quinlan finally stirred in his seat where he had been meditating.
"Showtime, then?"
he asked, blearily opening one eye. He covered his mouth as he let out a mighty yawn. "Perhaps not meditating, then." She raised an eyebrow at him, making him grin sheepishly. She couldn't help but smile back.
"Yes, Quinlan," she said dryly. "It's showtime."
Turning to the rest of the group in the shuttle, she raised her voice a little to be better heard over the engines.
"Does everyone remember our story?"
A discordant chorus of
"Yes!"
replied to her question. Zat, who was sitting just beside Katuni, leaned forward in his seat and flashed a grin that reminded Luminara of her lost friend, Kit Fisto.
"We're volunteers of the Order sent to help with the rescue. Not much to remember."
Luminara raised an eyebrow at him as well, but just like with Quinlan, she couldn't hold back a smile.
It all just felt so right. The Force was humming around her in a way she couldn't remember it doing since she was only an initiate. This was right. This was what the Order was supposed to be doing.
It seemed like hours before they finally touched down. Arranging themselves at the top of the doorway, Luminara noticed that Katuni was fiddling with her headdress.
"Aren't you the one that was telling me not to worry?"
she teased gently, hoping to distract the young knight from whatever was making her nervous. It seemed to work. At the very least, Katuni dropped her hands back to her sides and tucked them behind her back.
"Sorry, Master," she said, just excited to finally be doing something for once.
"As are we all, Knight Katuni," she said, as she straightened her posture and smoothed her expression. "As are we all."
There was a loud hiss as the door opened and the cabin depressurized. The heat and smells of Yavin 4 immediately began to seep in, making Luminara's back itch as she began to sweat. Stepping onto the ramp leading downwards, she felt the others fall into the pattern they had discussed earlier. At the bottom of the ramp, his cape falling over one shoulder and hands tucked behind his back, was a familiar figure.
"General Cleave," Luminara greeted as they reached the tarmac. "You are well?"
Cleave smiled tightly at her. Reaching out through the Force, Luminara relaxed slightly when she felt only pleasure at their appearance. She had been worried that the stern look on his face had been due to some resentment over their previous exit, but from the feel of it, he was only a little tired.
"Very well, now that you and the others have arrived."
He pressed his palm to his chest and gave a short, shallow bow.
"And you?"
"I am well as well," she replied. "The Order has donated 25 ships, 500 clone troopers, and 300 of our knights to this operation."
Cleave raised an eyebrow, his smile relaxing slightly into something more genuine.
300 Jedi knights for one little operation. I'm flattered."
"The Force told us that we needed to do this." Katuni's voice was tight with suppressed energy. "Of course we came." Cleave held up a hand.
"My apologies. I did not mean to imply otherwise."
Looking back to Luminara, he gestured.
if you would follow me. Commander Sato and his assistant will brief your soldiers and help them get settled in.
Luminara internally raised an eyebrow. Briefing already? But long experience kept her from commenting on that in front of everyone. Of course, she said smoothly. Knight Katuni, Master Voss, if you wouldn't mind assisting Commander Sato and his people? Both of them caught on immediately. Of course, Master Unduli, Katuni said with a short bow. Quinlan merely gave her a lazy salute, but his eyes were keen. Satisfied, Luminara turned back to Cleave. The Deveronian general offered his arm to her. Graciously taking it, they set off towards the main body of buildings that made up the resistance base. Stepping inside the slightly cooler building, Luminara was surprised at how few people were around. The last time she was present, only a few days before, the hallways had been packed with people so tightly that at times it was almost impossible to move around. Now, though, she saw only the occasional technician or pilot scurrying past. Beside her, Cleave began to speak.
I will admit, Master Unduli, I was worried when you and Master Windu left.
Oh? Luminara pushed the mystery of the empty halls to the back of her mind. You did not believe that we would return? Cleave shrugged.
I will not insult you by lying. Yes, I was worried. The Jedi have not precisely been active in fighting the Empire.
Luminara bit back an acidic comment. Cleave did not know of their situation, and she could feel no malice from him. He hadn't meant it as an insult. Master Windu told you our reasons. We are not a dictatorship, and we would not order our people to their possible deaths. Every knight and trooper here now volunteered for this mission and know the risks.
I understand, Cleave said. You're correct that this is going to be a dangerous mission, especially with how rushed we've been. I myself was only going to take volunteers as well.
Luminara accepted the apology. But rushed? She raised an eyebrow at him. What do you mean? Cleave grimaced.
Right, you had already left. I'd forgotten that.
Glancing around, he tugged her into a small side hallway. Stopping, he gently untangled their arms and took a step back. Crossing his now free arms over his armored chest, he looked at her intently.
Shortly after you left, the soldier that had been sent to do a preliminary scouting of the system returned like someone had lit a fire under her ass. Apparently, after she had sent out the scout probes, the personal star destroyer of the Grand Inquisitor had jumped into Drummond Kass's system for a chat with the Academy's new headmaster.
Luminara frowned. He dragged an entire star destroyer into his system for a talk? Cleave nodded.
We believe that with all of the secrecy surrounding the base, they were concerned that a long-range broadcast could be sliced. In any case, the soldier managed to hack in and record the conversation.
He took a deep breath.
Apparently, the Grand Inquisitor and his master have become impatient. Their current class,
his voice dripped with sarcasm at that word,
hasn't been bending the knee quick enough for their tastes, so they've decided to start over with a new batch.
It did not take a genius to realize what that meant. They're going to kill the children, Luminara said, feeling ill. Cleave nodded.
In a week. Well,
his face spasmed into a grimace.
3 days now.
I see. Luminara folded her arms. I will inform our forces to prepare, then. You have a plan, I assume?
He smiled grimly at her. One that needs a little adjustment now that you've arrived. If you'll follow me to the planning room.